everybody, and welcome to episode 22 of the ZU Cast, or ZooCast, as I like to call it. My name's Amanda Van Heil. I'm going to be one of your hosts today, and who do I have as my wonderful co-host?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Peyton Garrett. I go by Emperor P on the internet, and I will also be hosting today.
Awesome. Always excited to get to work with my ZU son, Peyton.
And always excited to work with the ZU mom.
So what we're going to be going over today, this one is a very Breath of the Wild-centric episode, seeing as the game came out a little over 5 years ago, and then we have the new one coming out apparently next year. So first topic of discussion is going to be why Breath of the Wild is the best open world game, and that's going to be from Randy. And then Connor is going to be taking it away with Piece of Heart, The Trial of the Sword.
After that, we're going to transition to a free-form discussion with us and Cody, the wonderful ZU webmaster, and then the credits with Eden at the end.
And most importantly, bloopers.
We love our bloopers here at ZU.
All right, well, let's hand it off to Randy for why Breath of the Wild is the best open-world game ever.
Getting lost in a video game world is one of the best things about the medium. You can explore whole new realms of magic and mystery to your heart's content. And when an open world game does this well, the results are staggering. Movies and books can tell you about a place or show you through certain lenses and angles, but only video games can let you live there. And Breath of the Wild is one of the best games. And, in terms of open worlds, I say the best. Hi, I'm Randy, news editor for Zelda Universe. You've probably heard me talk a lot about other games and how Zelda could reshape into them during previous podcasts. I think one of the core strengths of the series is its flexibility, the ability to be whatever it needs to be in service of being an incredible experience. But when Breath of the Wild steered the series into more open world territory than it had ever been, it was on a whole new level. So what defines an open world? It's kind of tough to say because, at the end of the day, all video games are closed off in some way, limited by memory space, time constraints, budgets. Some games opt to do smaller, more handcrafted experiences. There's a lot of benefit to that. I always think about the Mass Effect series, well, in general, but also about how the first and second games differed so wildly in their world design. Mass Effect 1 promised an open universe to explore, and especially at the time, did a pretty alright job with it. The Citadel felt like a large space station you could run around and get lost in, the galaxy map let you investigate plenty of systems, and there are a large number of planets to explore. The problem here, as with many open world games, came from the repetitive design of interiors. All the planets were a big square map with arbitrary cutoff zones filled with a sort of its time terrain modding. Slap on a color filter, pretty skybox, and texture, and you're good. It's cool for a while, but the sameness keeps happening. Every building you enter is prefabricated and follows one of three exact same layouts. Everything else is just how the furniture inside is arranged. Except for a couple of key story areas, this makes the task of exploration feel a lot more repetitive than it should. In Mass Effect 2, they switched to a tighter, more crafted stages. You weren't taking a vehicle out for a spin over an alien terrain and looking off into the horizon, but the combat was tighter, the design of each stage was more customized. In general, I tend to prefer this design for a game rather than repetitive open worlds or randomly generated anything. Like a finely crafted Mario level, I like to learn the space and get to know it so it becomes familiar and something I can get better at beating. It's more limited, but ideally, it feels more authored and can create some great set pieces. Zelda also has this swinging pendulum between the two styles, though it only actually hits open world design on a couple of occasions. The original NES Zelda was the closest thing to an open world for decades. You could go almost anywhere from the start. Harder to reach places required special tools, of course, but those are fairly realistic barriers, at least when compared to future games like A Link to the Past. That game is more of a pathfinding game, like a Metroid. Progress is barred between obtuse item puzzles and power-ups, which is why that Super Metroid Link to the Past randomizer works so well. Most Zelda games, I feel, fall into this exact category. Ocarina of Time, for example, does not have an open world. You can't access most of it for a large portion of the game. On top of that, The attempt at creating a large Hyrule field just made a big chunk of dead space where nothing interesting can be done or found. It only serves to get in your way to your next objective. Even back in 98, I remember thinking about how much more boring it was to move around than the Hyrule of the Super Nintendo. I'm sorry if this sounds like sacrilege, but Hyrule Field is a hub world like Peach's Castle, except it's empty and annoying. Majora's Mask, Twilight Princess, Skyward Sword, and a lot of other Zelda games all have this, but they do a better job of fleshing it out. The closest thing to an open-world Zelda was Wind Waker, but don't yell at me just yet. Yes, there was a lot of time spent sailing open waters where not a lot would happen. But the improvement was in how you could see something in the horizon and then go there. You felt like you were arriving at a destination and not running a chore. Plus, sailing was at least fun in its own way and not just spamming the roll button. The actual problem was that the game artificially deadlocked you on a specific path for at least half the game. Control of your ship was jerked away before you could figure out what all those new places you wanted to go visit were. Now, once you are in the back half, it's great. But even then, you know, sometimes you can't access an island without specific items. It's still kind of that arbitrary limitations, forcing you to turn around and come back later. So it's not perfect. Most open world games are kind of similar. Fallout 3 was another favorite of mine. For the most part, you're allowed to go wherever you want fairly early on. The game enemies scale with you as you level, so there aren't any level ranges to make progression difficult, like in the older days of World of Warcraft. You can run from one end of the continent in Warcraft to the other, but enemies will be more differently powered based on progression design, not necessarily any real-world logic. And that's what breaks a lot of open-world games for me, the logic. I've talked about arbitrary power-up requirements, like a hookshot being needed to access a whole new chunk of the world. In others, it's a matter of power level. But it's all a very gamey logic. There's not a suitable in-universe reason for why you can't progress. There's just a wall of twilight that physically prevents exploration until the story dictates it necessary. Aside from the Great Plateau tutorial zone, which is more of a necessary evil than an oversight, Breath of the Wild has no such limits. Sure, you can't just walk into Death Mountain without heat protection, but the materials needed are available from the start, and it's so hot your face will explode is a pretty natural conclusion to walking into a volcano, as is with the cold and the desert's wild swings. Aside from natural hazards, anywhere you see in the game you can reach, including the final boss of the game. What I like is that you aren't prevented from making the terrible mistake of getting to Ganon with a twig and a pot lid. If you die, you know why. He's big, he has laser axes, and you brought a soup spoon. But even then, a skilled enough player can find a way to make this work. Videos online of it are amazing to watch. A lot of people, I believe wrongfully, criticize Breath of the Wild as having no story. A, if you back up all the cutscenes, it's got plenty enough of a story. But B, you're misunderstanding the type of story that this game is trying to tell. It's a survival story first and foremost. Man versus nature, topped with ancient evil. Like Fallout 3, you're on your own a lot. The story isn't, and then the cutscene happened, and then Link blew up a train and left to safety. It's you, the player, snuck into a camp trying to stealthily attack the enemy before botching it, blowing up a fire barrel, and then everything going into chaos. It's not a story happening to characters. It's a story happening to you, that you are dictating. It's these stories you tell to your friends when you asked if they found the weird glowing mountain and tell them what happened to you. Then they talk about the saving attractive fish people, and yes, this is all preset events in the game, but how you're doing it is the most important function. That is where the story is. And with the world as large as it is, and the tools as varied, you'll likely never do the same thing as someone else. Of course, there isn't always something new and amazing around every corner, but there is always something to do, including finding game shrines, which lead you into the more authored trials. People often seem to say that they want more traditional Zelda dungeons back, by which they mean Ocarina of Time-style puzzle marathons centered around one specific new item. Actually, traditional Zeldas are more combat-focused, but I digress. There's certainly nothing wrong with wanting those. And like I said, I generally do prefer handcrafted experiences. But I want to explore Hyrule. I want to get out there into the world and save people from monsters, hunt down artifacts, It's the linear nature of Zelda games that keeps me from replaying Twilight Princess. I can't do that first 5 hours anymore. I just can't. There's no freedom. It's so slow. Ilya's there, so that sucks. And if you hate a dungeon, that's too bad. Which actually get bored in a number of Zelda dungeons. You can skip shrines altogether if you're skilled enough in Breath of the Wild, and even the Divine Beasts. That's as open a world as you can get in a video game. So I had the idea for this before I started playing Elden Ring, and a lot of what I said actually applies to that game. One thing I noticed early on, and I had this problem with Pokemon Legends Arceus, is that you still didn't have the ability to climb. Seems silly when I say it out loud to make a deal out of it, but I don't think I realized how much the freedom to climb over every rock in my way felt empowering. The freedom of movement in Breath of the Wild is really something else. You get there towards the end of Arceus with the partner Pokemon, and I'm curious to see what else Elden Ring will do. I know I'll be trying really hard to make my horses double jump in the sequel to Breath of the Wild. The last thing I want to mention, and I'm sorry if you hear me talk about this a lot, is Outer Wilds. Not Outer Worlds, that's the Fallout-like game. Outer Wilds took a lot of inspiration from Breath of the Wild, Majora's Mask, and all the other Zeldas, but the design ideas are what I really want to talk about. The game, similarly, is completely open almost immediately. Get through the little tutorial and blast off and see the galaxy. The difference here is that areas of Outer Wilds are restricted by more esoteric knowledge, but discovering this knowledge by exploring the world, reading the logs, and experimenting lead to a number of aha moments that feel better than opening a chest and getting a hookshot and then seeing the point where you point the hookshot and then go. So while you can't go to the Quantum Moon immediately whenever you want due to it physically vanishing as you approach, you will eventually find rules that it follows, allowing you to access it whenever you want from then on. There's no power-ups. It follows those rules from the beginning of the game, so if you somehow knew them going in, you could just do it. And that sense of rewarding discovery makes you feel far more incredible than any power-up. I could make some more direct comparisons, but I think I've made my biggest points. I want to be clear that if you prefer Zeldas to lead you from dungeon to dungeon, that's fine. If you like the temples, that's fine. That's fine. That's fine. You're allowed to. The great thing about Zelda is that there are so many things here for so many different people to get their enjoyment out. But for me personally, Breath of the Wild takes all the things that I want the most out of Zelda and puts them at the forefront of the game. Also, the breakable weapons didn't bother me. They were just another resource like anything else. Although I will admit that the ability to combine similar weapons to reinforce them, much like you can do in Fallout 3, would be a very welcome addition and I think a happy compromise for all parties involved. Anyway, I've never played a game that I wanted to get lost in more than Breath of the Wild. It strikes a great balance of being truly open while still feeling like it has that unique craftsmanship of smaller games. 5 years later, and I'm still not sick of wandering Hyrule. I hope you're as excited as I am for the upcoming sequel. Thank you very much for your time. I'm Randy Marr, and I will see you next time.
So, Peyton, I know you have a lot of opinions about Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, I don't like it very much. Like, it's not a bad game, but if I'm gonna play an open world game of any kind, it's not in my first probably five.
You know, I respect that. Like, you can not like a game, but still be like, okay, it is a good quality game, it's just not what I like, and there's nothing wrong with that. Next, we're going to look at some of the Forumite memories from some of our forum members, talking about some of their favorite Breath of the Wild moments. So first up, we've got Smallville Boy, who says, "My favorite moment was when I first left the Great Plateau and saw Ferodra flying over Lake Hylia. My jaw dropped, and that was a magic moment."
Another memory comes from Danny Cat, who says, "I managed to go into the game knowing almost nothing about the story in spite of only getting it in 2020. So when I first saw the Temple of Time, I headed towards it, and going up the slope and seeing the ruined temple and all these broken robots around it, I found myself thinking, what happened? How did it come to this? and spent quite a while looking at them all, trying to work out if the robots had been defending the temple or attacking it. Seeing Castletown for the first time was an even bigger shock. I climbed over the wall, looked down, and it was just gone. And yet the layout was still recognizable. It's very similar to Twilight Princess. I remember what this place looked like, full of people and life, and now it was all gone. That was a shock.
So Peyton, I know it's not your favorite Zelda game, but do you have any favorite memories of Breath of the Wild?
I do have a couple memories that I enjoy, mostly, honestly, from our charity event we do every year, Z-Youthon. There's a funny clip we have out there, and it's of Amanda being blindfoldedly led across a guardian-infested land, and it's me and our dear friend Elias Thompson trying to guide Amanda desperately while being shot at by guardians. Amanda did not last very long, and I just remember the awkward silence as we're listening to the game over screen and a blindfolded Amanda being just told to press A at the please continue screen. Still makes me laugh every time I think of it.
The clip is on our Twitch channel, so definitely watch it. It's pretty funny. You know, I gotta say, my favorite Breath of the Wild memory was playing it for the first time at E3 2016, because just the way they had that set up was just amazing. Like, you were in Hyrule when you were there, and the way they, like, opened up the shrine, I guess, is kind of what they had. It was like you were going through a shrine, and then you were in there. It was, oh my gosh, it was just magical. It was like Disney, but Zelda. It was so great.
Rest in peace, Electronic Entertainment Expo. We will not forget the great memories.
Good times, good times. All right, well, that's enough gushing over Breath of the Wild for now, but, or at least from us for the moment. But now we're going to have Connor talk about Piece of Heart, The Trial of the Sword.
Five glorious years ago, when we first got our hands on Breath of the Wild, as we awoke to Zelda's voice and took our first steps into a Hyrule that we would never forget, what none of us expected was just how much of an ordeal we had undertaken. Along with the voice acting, the new mechanics, and an environment that's still mesmerizing even to this day, we were faced with a world that was challenging and unforgiving to a point unseen since perhaps the NES titles. Through countless brave attempts, through trial and error, and through moments of death that were often as hilarious as they were frustrating, we fought our way across Hyrule and felt, some of us, that we finally understood how to survive the challenges set before us. And so, with the first DLC released for Breath of the Wild, it was time to put those skills to the ultimate test in a challenge that brought together every strategy, every environment, and every rage-inducing death in a gauntlet that is both a heart-wrenching trial and a glorious triumph, known simply as the Trial of the Sword. My name is Connor Schultz. And this is Piece of Heart. I'm not usually a glutton for punishment. Games that are advertised as being especially difficult, I tend to avoid unless something about it attracts my interest. Slapping a Zelda title on it is a pretty good way to do that. Just look at Zelda 2. But the fact that this was a DLC means that I was already heavily invested in what was going on. Especially as far as the Master Sword is concerned. Flashback to March of 2017, mere weeks after Breath of the Wild was released. In the midst of recovering the final memory, we see a chipped and battered Master Sword, glowing faintly but distinctly. The spirit of the blade calling to Princess Zelda in an attempt to save her master. I've written and talked repeatedly how much I love Fi, and to get even this brief echo of her was more than enough to get my heart racing in both excitement and sadness as I saw both her broken condition and her will to press on, It made those memories all the more impactful to me, and it made the opportunity to restore her completely a chance that I couldn't dream of passing up. What followed was nothing short of torture. Everything that I had come to expect and dread about Breath of the Wild was packaged together in three trials of continuous conflict. While Zelda had worked with enemy gauntlets before, with sections like Twilight Princess's Cave of Ordeals and Skyward Sword's Lanayru Boss Rush, never before has both the core mechanics and sheer difficulty of the game been so uniquely expressed in one exhausting challenge. Much like Eventide Island, you're stripped of everything from your weapons to the clothes on your back and forced to rebuild your inventory from scratch. From room to room, you slowly build up your inventory while taking out each unique wave of monsters. Carefully taking out each wave. Deprived of all your resources, you're dependent on what scraps of ingredients you're able to find along the way to replenish your health. And virtually no armor means that your defenses are at their lowest. One misstep, one false move, and suddenly your 20 hearts is chopped down to 12. You do gain some respites along the way, allowing you to cook and obtain some additional support, but compared to what you're facing, it seems wholly inadequate. From lightning storms to pitch black ruins, from bokoblins to Hinoxes, to even full guardians, every single room has its own terrors to face. I remember early on being constantly frustrated by a pair of Lizafuls that would either rush forward and tail whip me, or sit just out of reach, spitting water at me. I also learned how surprisingly accurate bokoblins are with arrows, especially bomb arrows. The number of times an errant mistake or an unobserved enemy took me out is more than I care to remember. And with each death, you're sent all the way back to the start, forced to brave the onslaught from the beginning. How vividly I remember the final chamber. A lone guardian turret observes a platoon of bokoblins all on horseback, and in their midst, a silver Lynel. A blue one earlier in the challenge had been the bane of my existence for literally hours, and now this Lynel, and seemingly every other enemy in the room, took immediate notice of me. After a chaotic entrance and several explosions directed at me, I was able to climb the tower with the turret and remove it. Then, taking a sniping position, I slowly weeded out the bokoblins one by one. I tried to do the same with the Lynel, but after a few lucky shots, it started to counterattack. In my panic, I used one of the only fairies I had left instead of the several pieces of food I had prepared, and then tried to keep my distance despite the fire arrows raining down on me. On a whim, I pulled out my ancient arrows, and in a flash, the Lynel vanished. I stood there, stunned, for several seconds, wondering where the heck the Lynel went. I had no idea that ancient arrows could do that to anything besides guardians. After finally composing myself, I stepped into the portal and found myself in the spacious chamber I had seen twice before. Three sets of glowing, rayless stairs climbed up to a central chamber, surrounded by seven Sheikah monks. Like all the others, their words echoed, glowing before me. "You have done well. The depth of your heroism is beyond question." With their forms dissolving, the Master Sword lay before me. And for the final time, I drew it forth, its glowing blade a testament to the power I had received and the trial I had overcome. A moment that will forever remain in a piece of my heart. I'm Connor Schultz, and this has been Piece of Heart. I'll talk to you next time.
Thank you for that, Connor. I remember a lot of fun memories of the Trial of the Sword, specifically how I said, I don't want to do this, and just did a clip out of bounds and cheated my way to the end. You know, the real hero way of doing things.
What? Isn't that what? Working smarter, not harder?
Exactly. It's not a bug. It's a feature.
Exactly. Go for it. I never even finished Trial of the Sword, so, you know, you're doing better than I am with that.
We also have some more Forumite memories from more of our lovely forum members. We have one here from Kenyarian. One of my most memorable moments is when my horse bolted off a cliff and I didn't know horses could die. I'd hate to see what the aftermath of that looked like.
Ooh, hey Peyton, remember that time I had to kill my horse in Zeuthon and I attempted to blow it up, but I ended up blowing myself up instead?
Yeah, that horse was named Elias.
Yeah, it was. That was really funny. All right, let's look at Gregarious Tree has to say, and that is, one of my favorite moments was making it out to Gerudo City, where I went first, actually, and seeing that it wasn't just a tiny outpost, but actually, arguably, the biggest settlement in the world. The size of it was incredibly exciting, and the amount of things to do even more so. Probably one of my favorite quests in the game is still helping the little girl who wanted to grow the little garden in the back alley and needing to follow the trail of watermelon rinds to the top of the city. Don't know why. I just found that really charming. I love Gerudo City, or Gerudo Town, or whatever you want to call it. Like, I could spend all day there. It was just so cool.
I just hope I get to go there in the next game in the Desert Vaux outfit instead of the Vi outfit. Nothing against Desert Vi Link, but I just love the look of the Vaux outfit better.
Yeah.
And you just never get enough excuses to wear it. So now we're going to bring Cody on board for a few minutes to talk about our Breath of the Wild thoughts in a little bit more of an open discussion. So welcome, Cody.
So Cody, I understand you've played Breath of the Wild once or twice.
I have played that game before, yes. It's I think, still at my number one on my Zelda game list.
Mine too. So Peyton, where would you say it is for you?
It's in the top 20 at least. Not quite sure where. It's not in the bottom three. It exists. It's a game. It is a Zelda game, I will say. I'm not one of those that's like, oh my god, Breath of the Wild's not a real Zelda game.
Well, I don't know anybody that does that. If they do, I'll go kick them.
Because, a lot of people, surprisingly.
Well, you don't think I listen to those people.
That's fair.
What is your favorite Zelda game then, Peyton?
My favorite Zelda game by far is probably Twilight Princess, followed by Skyward Sword, and then I think probably Majora after that. Top three, generally.
So what is it about those three that you would put above Breath of the Wild?
It's nothing that's necessarily right about those three, because they're all very flawed games in their own ways. There's just something about Breath of the Wild that doesn't sit with me very well. It's not that it's a bad game, and obviously it's not a bad Zelda game, but comparatively to, like, the others, in my opinion, the world just, for having so much, it just doesn't appeal to me as much. I don't find any of the side quests overly memorable, other than like some of the shrine quests and some of the cast quests and the one where you have to get all the rush rooms randomly. The shrines are good. The divine beasts, I think, are really cool. I think the story is okay, especially for what he's trying to tell. I think it'll be even better in the sequel to Breath of the Wild. But I just think that all of these things were done a lot better in other Zelda games, personally.
So what I really like about Breath of the Wild, and I touched on it in our Zelda character panel that we did at PAX East recently, is the characters are very dynamic. There are a lot of flawed characters, especially Zelda, which makes her very relatable. And you get to see, like, multiple sides to these characters, and you get to see, like, their weaknesses. I don't know how to word it any other way than just, like, you get to see, like, what their weaknesses are. You get to see, like, what their strong points are. You get to know I guess you get to know the characters. That's the best way to describe it, is you really get to know them. And that's what I liked about Skyward Sword as well. I thought that did a very good job with it. I think story-wise, Skyward Sword does the best job. But there were just so many side characters in Breath of the Wild that made it... It made me want to finish the game because I wanted to get to know all the characters there and, like, do things for them.
I disagree, personally. I think that, other than the main cast, that being the major royalties that are currently alive and the champions and the champions' descendants, obviously there were a few characters here and there that had a lot of personality, and a lot of the Garuda, I would say, all had, like, very distinctive personalities, in my opinion. I think most of the side characters were just kind of one-dimensional. Like, they didn't really add a whole lot.
But, I mean, when I'm talking about the side characters, I'm referring to, like, the royalty. There were a lot of them. I mean, there were the four champions, their descendants. You've got Zelda, you got the king, you've got the Koroks and all that. I mean, there were a lot of very dynamic characters. It wasn't just one or two, like in previous games.
If you compare it to Skyward Sword, for example, like, there's Groose.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and Groose is a fun character, but it's not like there's 30 extremely memorable side characters in Skyward Sword either, you know?
I disagree. I remember a lot of them very frequently because a lot of them have side quests that are very individualized and personalized. You know, you get to know them as a person. Like, for example, Fledge is one. You get to see him get stronger. Pippet and Corinne and the other Knights of the Academy going through their love triangle. The shopkeepers.
But it's the same number, like, in Breath of the Wild. Like, it's the same number of characters that you do that with.
Maybe, but I just think proportionally it's just a little off. But then again, it is hard because one is, like, a big open world game and one is a much more condensed Hyrule. So that's definitely, like, a factor that should be, like, put in place there. I will agree.
Yeah, I mean, I think Breath of the Wild has, in some ways, it's actually the most similar game to Skyward Sword is Breath of the Wild. Not in open world stuff, obviously, but, like, in terms of the what they started to do with the characters and what they were doing with item upgrades and stamina meters and various other things, Skyward Sword was them experimenting. And with sort of the dungeon structure being different, like, Skyward Sword basically said, well, what if everything was a dungeon? What if, you know, you had one dungeon, which was the pre-dungeon phase, but it's still, there's one path that you go through.
Right.
And you solve puzzles to get through it, and then you enter the dungeon, which is more dungeon.
Right.
Whereas Breath of the Wild said, well, what if everything's open? Both of them were experimenting with that. I think Skyward Sword is more experimental than a lot of people gave credit at the time. Like, I do like Skyward Sword. It's like, I don't know, 6th or 7th on my list, which, considering that there's 16 or so Zelda games, depending on which games you count as Zelda games. For example, I don't count Triforce Heroes as a Zelda game.
Understandable.
It's a pretty good game, and a pretty good Zelda game, I think. But for me, Breath of the Wild, I liked the idea of all open world instead of... because the dungeons are fine, but they've never been the part that I've most enjoyed about Zelda, I guess, which right. is going to be a very different experience to someone who was, like, born when Twilight Princess came out, and they were like, were you born before or after Twilight Princess came out?
Oh my gosh. I was born before Wind Waker came out.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. You're very old. So that means you would have been, like, I don't know, 7 or something playing Twilight Princess, right?
5 or 6.
Four or five or six
in that range.
Right, and it's like, this is what Zelda is, you know, there's a bit of exploration, and then you get to the dungeon, and the dungeons are really good, and that's what Zelda is to you.
That's fair.
For me, I think I'm the kind of person who has put, like, 1,000 hours into Skyrim, and I've never completed the main game, because if you give me a main quest, what I'll do is veer off immediately and say, well, look, I'm the leader of the Thieves Guild and the Assassins Guild and the Mages Guild and the, you know, but I'm not going to return this ring or whatever that you want me to give to some guy. And so that's why Breath of the Wild was perfect to me. It's a game where wherever you go, whatever direction you veer off into, you'll find adventures. You'll find just people doing fun things. There's just some good characters. There's one that's coming to mind at the moment is the incel, we might call him, outside of yeah. the Gerudo
yep.
area, who, when you dress up as a girl, is like, please, here's my gifts, take my shoes, take my other shoes, I'll just walk around bare feet on this hot sand, it's fine.
Do you have any bath water I could buy?
Yeah, do you have any Gamer Link bath water for me to buy? That's not a character that means anything in the plot. Like, if you never encountered that character, it would mean nothing to the story. But, like,
well,
there's still a lot of...
I'm actually you here. I'm pretty sure he's, like, a required NPC that you have to talk to.
Okay, yes, a required NPC, but it doesn't further the story having him be like, hey, you're cute, I think is basically what Cody is getting at.
Well, actually, Peyton, the Gerudo, you do not have to enter the Gerudo area to complete the game.
That's also true, so I guess you are correct here. That is very true. But yeah, I very much agree with your sentiments. I think those are all very true. But for me, that's the opposite of what I like in a game. So I think that just, again, comes down to personal preference of what you're looking for in a Zelda game, whether it's for the exploration or the dungeons. For me, I love open world games. I really do. I've played The Witcher. I've played multiple of the I've played multiple of the Elder Scrolls games, and Xenoblade Chronicles is my favorite game series today. But, and I think this is an issue that a lot of open world games have, is replayability. And yes, I know that replayability is different for everyone. Some people can replay Breath of the Wild just over and over and over again, and there's speedrunners that exist. But for me, I like to play games to their fullest, to experience as much as I can all at once. So sinking all that time into Breath of the Wild over and over and over again after I've already done it one or two times, it's just a lot more hassle compared to going back and playing a game like Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword, where at this point I have memorized everything I need to do to get 100% in those games. So it's just a difference there in how your playstyle might affect how you view the game as a whole.
For me, for Breath of the Wild, I'm always really big in learning, like, backstory on characters, and I think that's why I like Breath of the Wild so much, is a lot of the game is just learning characters' backstories. And, you know, I was all, like, when I was younger, I always loved reading through, like, players' guides and everything, like, just reading, like, the character biographies of, like, I just remember reading about, like, Cat Monroe in Star Fox 64 and talking about how, like, you know, she's in love with Falco, but he doesn't even know she exists. And, you know, I'm 11, 12, being like, oh my gosh, feel you, totally feel you there, girl. Despite the fact that I was a stupid child then.
Who?
Oh, you know, Cat Monroe, everyone's favorite Star Fox character.
Cat Monroe? This feels like an OC.
Yeah, or, you know, learning about, like, what, Bill, and finding out, like, his background with Fox and being friends. And it's like, I just loved learning those backstories because it made me appreciate just the characters so much more, and it made me want to, like, succeed. Like, when I know why a character is doing something, it makes me, it compels, that's what drives me forward. I don't, like, if it's just, do this. I'm like, I'm not gonna just do this because you told me, like, but now that I know why you're asking me to do this, okay, I'll do it.
Okay, I might have just fallen into another dimension. I recall zero Star Fox characters named Cat Monroe and Bill. I feel like I would have remembered this.
Have you played Star Fox 64?
Yeah!
Okay, so they're only on a few of the routes, and you don't you're not going to get them unless you go a certain way. But yes, they are in.
Oh, no, okay. I know who Bill is now. I remember who Bill is now. Yeah, he's the random pilot guy. I like him. I like Bill, yeah. He's the dog. Cat Monroe?
Yeah, I love Cat.
Oh, Cat. I got it. I remember now. Yeah, I didn't know she had a last name.
Well, I know because I read it in the player's guide because I'm all about character backstories.
I mean, that's fair. I mean, that was a good argument. I forgot that those people existed.
And that's, you know, that's why I like Breath of the Wild, is it's learning their character backstories.
Right.
And finding out what they want and why they want it and the tactics used to get what they need and how Link furthers their own stories. It's called an actor-character analysis.
Well, and that's like, they went so far with that concept, they just yoinked all of Link's memories as well and said, yeah, figure out his backstory while you're at it.
Yeah, and I thought that was really cool. And that's what I think I'm going to love about Breath of the Wild 2, is that now that we know this backstory, we have so much more to build on.
I will say those were probably some of my favorite memories of Breath of the Wild, were just finding the random diaries related to the main characters, like Zelda and Link and all them, and just reading about themselves. like what their thoughts used to be.
Yeah, like I loved reading, I always end up calling Revali Falco, but I loved reading Falco Revali's diary. And this is another thing I touched on in the Breath of the Wild or the character panel, how Revali was writing in his diary about how, like, you know, he realizes he is the best of the best when it comes to the champions and warriors and all that in the Rito village, and they would constantly like try and get him to do like menial tasks, and he's like, I'm not wasting my time with this. And because he had, you know, he had sufficient self-worth, maybe a little too much self-worth, but he had a whole lot of self-worth to be like, I'm not doing that. And then even when they finally asked him to do something that was worthy of his talent, he's like, I'm gonna, and he even says in there how he's like, I'm gonna let him wait a little bit just to make him realize what they're asking of me, and then I'll say yes. And I absolutely, like, I gained new respect for him there. And the same with, like, Link, like, how's this guy just, he takes one look at him like, how is this kid supposed to be a great champion? I just invented a new way to fly, and you're this little blonde little waif.
Did you just call Link a waif?
Yeah.
No, Revali did.
In Amanda's inner dialogue, Revali called Link a waif.
You know, I think Revali is fun. His girlfriend, Kat Monroe, that you only read about in the Secret Diaries, really good. Look, I just think Breath of the Wild is a game that replaying, I guess, is something that a short story-based game is a lot easier to just be like, well, here's my 100% run, let's do a replay. But also, my run of Skyward Sword or whatever is only going to take like 30 hours even if I get lost somehow on the straight run forward. Whereas Breath of the Wild, I've put like 300 hours into or something. So it's like, yeah, well, if I want to replay that and make it 600 hours, that might be too much for me. But it's like, I got out of it what I wanted to get out of it. I got a lot of hours out of it. So, I mean, I'm happy with my time in Breath of the Wild.
Right, that's fair. And if I guess you are measuring a game based off of the amount of hours and not necessarily the replayability, there are definitely a lot of Zelda games that have probably been outnumbered by Breath of the Wild on my list. So
I just go by how much fun I had playing it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fun game. I will not deny that. I'm not trying to just bash on Breath of the Wild. It's the worst game ever. 0 out of 10. Didn't deserve game of the year. It deserved it. I think it's a fantastic game, and I really did enjoy it during my playthrough. But I just never feel just like the call to really play it again unless it's some sort of special occasion.
Yeah, I mean, as a expert speedrunner, you have certain kind of games that you really like to just play over and over and over again. I'm not a play over and over and over again type of person.
Oh yeah, you've never played certain games for almost 4 years straight without ever finishing them.
Well, but that's a mark of my expertise in not replaying them. Because if I replay them too much, I might accidentally make progress during my ZU-thon run, and that just wouldn't be as good, wouldn't be as entertaining. Anyway, that was our Breath of the Wild discussion.
All right, well, thank you guys for joining us for the roundtable discussion.
It looks like we've got one last Forumite memory, and that is from Everin_Spear, who says, I left my horse somewhere near Akala Falls and paraglided down to Torin Wetlands. I didn't really think it would work, but I whistled for my horse, and he actually heard me. He had to take the road around the long way east past Tarrytown and around basically the entire lake. In the meantime, I entertained myself cutting down trees. So when I was spotted by a guardian, there was almost nowhere to hide. I wasn't too experienced with guardians at this point, and I didn't have enough hearts or good enough equipment to survive even one hit. Initially, I hid behind a tree trunk and hoped the guardian would lose track of me and wander off. That didn't work. The guardian walked around the tree stump one way and then the other, and then finally stood directly over top of it. So I stood and faced the guardian, was nothing but a damaged Voco shield to protect me. But as the guardian began to charge its laser, I saw my horse approaching from the side of the screen. In a split second, I jump on and sped away as the dirt where I stood exploded from the guardian's attack. Nice. Horsey to the rescue.
We love our horses in that game, all of them. And thank you to all of our forum members for submitting your memories of Breath of the Wild. I certainly had fun reading them.
I do too. I just like hearing everybody just having so much fun playing it.
Well, Amanda, it seems we're coming to a little bit of a close today.
Peyton, I had so much fun talking about Breath of the Wild with you and with Cody, and then just reading all these awesome forum memories and just thinking about back when I first played Breath of the Wild and how I love it so much. And Peyton, I know you don't like it, but you know, you still have some fun times with it. So thank you guys so much for listening. Peyton, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at EmperorP most places. I do a lot of gaming-related content. I'm getting into more comic book-related content as well, so enjoying some of that on the side. And that's all. Where can people find you, Amanda?
Well, there are many places you can find me because I just show up everywhere. I am on Twitter at Amanda Van Hyl. I host Zelda News on Zelda Universe TV on our wonderful YouTube channel. You can also find me here hosting our podcast. And then I'm on Twitch at Panda Princessa. And then I'm also the host of the Shine Sparkers podcast for all you Metroid fans out there. Well, thanks again, everybody, for listening. Peyton, thank you so much for joining me. We're going to hand it over to Eden for the credits. And of course, stay tuned at the end for some fun bloopers.
Hey, did you miss us? Good, because we missed you too. Okay, let's do the credits now. Peyton Garrett finally emerged from our very own Shrine of Resurrection to co-host this episode with Amanda Van Hyl. Randy Marr called Breath of the Wild the best open-world game ever. His words. They don't necessarily reflect the opinions of the ZUBC or Zelda universe as a whole, but they might. Connor Schultz's Peace of Heart this time shined a spotlight on that oft-overshadowed first DLC pack, The Master Trials. Thanks to Cody Davies for joining the hosts to celebrate this milestone anniversary for the best open-world game ever. Or is it? And special thanks to the members of the Zelda Universe forums for sharing their memories of the game with us. The ZUcast's executive producer is Eden Biskin. Wait, that's me! I also serve as our Zelda Universe forums liaison, so,
join the Zelda Universe forums.
Cody Davies is the consulting producer. He produces consulting, or something. Kelly Timmerman is our head editor and technical wizard. The latter title is honorary, but accurate. Mary Stowe is our social media liaison, so she's the one posting about the podcast on Zelda Universe's Facebook, Twitter, etc., etc. Alexandria Gribble and Caden Garvey are our graphic designers, making snazzy lower thirds and the like for our YouTube releases. The ZUcast is a production of the ZUBC, a division of Zelda Universe's media team. You can subscribe to the podcast in all the major directories, or by using our RSS feed in any podcatcher. If you want to tell us what you thought of this or any previous episode, or I don't know, maybe you're listening to this and it's the year 2041, any later episodes, or if you just want to say hi, you can send your feedback to podcast@zeldauniverse.net. That is an email address. Alternatively, you can post it in the ZUcast hub thread on the ZU forums under Community Central, at Zelda Universe on Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok, or at Zelda Universe TV on Instagram, YouTube, and Twitch. If you've been following us for a while, you might have been expecting more of a Breath of the Wild flair to these credits given the anniversary. Well, that'll teach you to expect anything. Now please excuse me, it's late and I'm exhausted. Until next time!
Well, Amanda, it seems we're coming to a little bit of a close today.
I believe so. Hey, look at us being all efficient, getting this done before, like, I even have to get changed for Kung Fu.
I hope that goes in the bloopers.
Yep. Well, you know, I have to push the whole, like, you know, I am a black belt now, after all.
Episode outline. So next is... What the f***?
Hey!
Fortnite memories?
You know, Fortnite memories.
My favorite Zelda game. Outro. It says outro.
It says Breath of the Wild freeform discussion, and then it says chat, Fortnite memories, and then outro.
Forumites. Forum. Like the forums.
Oh!
It's like the memories from the forum.
Oh, okay.
And we already recorded all those, so...
Okay. Gotcha.
But you haven't recorded your Fortnite memories.
I was sitting here this whole time trying to figure out why we're having Fortnite memories. Okay, I can see it now. Like, I don't know, this the U and the M looked like a T.
No, I get why you thought that, but please end the episode. I wanna go to bed.
You're the one that kept us an extra 2 hours.
It wasn't my fault.